we took that summer to kind of recuperate and figure out how we're going to do just that. And I think we have a pretty good head start for this company for the end of the year and on to the next.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really great point, because when you have a band such as yourselves, so each and every single one of you have your own lives and your own things going on, coming together and creating this project, making this band together as a team, you know, is not only rewarding, but also is an incredible feat, because a lot of people have a hard time getting along with each other, right? And making a band work is another skill you have to learn. How did you, I mean, if anybody has something they want to throw out.
Well, I mean, obviously we have our moments where we kind of butt heads. I mean, we haven't had any like serious arguments because, you know, we're adults, right? But
we claim we're adults, but yeah.
We're allegedly adults. No, but like we butt heads obviously on certain things, but you know, I mean, at the end we respect each other and we understand where each person is coming from, and we're able to either compromise or just kind of resolve it. So, you know, we kind of just navigate that as we go, I think.
Okay. And I mean, like, you guys creating music, what is your process as a band?
I'll leave that to you.
So for our songs, the main person that is writing them, I guess. So the way it works is I just kind of have an idea at any moment. I could be in the shower, could be having breakfast, and then I'll just try and write it or record it on my phone. And then once I do that, I go and try to recreate what I did, whether it was humming or whatever. Once I have like a basic structure of the song, I bring it to Nally, our vocalist, and her and I kind of work it together. And then once we like what we have, a little demo, right? Then we bring it into our practices, and then the whole band kind of starts adding in everything that, you know, they want to add.
So when you have, for example, like you have a bass and you have also a guitar. I was talking about this in the other podcast. Bass is one of those things that is so important, especially with song progression, and it's something that's sometimes missed. Where it's not sometimes strong enough, sometimes you don't get the right beat, or it's just not going along. How has that been for you guys? You know, every single band has their bass sound.
For me, the bass is like the heart of a song. You know, sometimes it might not be appreciated enough, but if you take out the bass, you know, you're gonna be able to tell something
immediately. Yes.
The bass along with the drums, we keep the song like together, and the rhythm section. So our vocalist and our lead guitarist can pull out some magic. We need to be on point, the rhythm section.
When he brings, like, for example, when you get like, you know, you're writing your music, for example, and you're bringing this to the band, are you bringing in, like, is any one of you bringing in, like, oh, okay, I thought of this, let me add that, you know, let's try this, or let's go this angle? Because not always what you start off with is what the end result is. A lot of the times it changes, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
So the way it works is the first practice where we bring in the song, we just kind of play once, just me and her. And just after that, they kind of listen to it and they start adding things on another take. And then from there, it just starts happening. I don't really like to dictate or micromanage what they're doing as right. much as I can. But for example, if most of the time I really like what they're doing, so I just, you know, I'll tell them, oh, that sounds really good, we should keep that. What happens a lot is like maybe I don't like something and I'll be like, okay, can we do that a little differently? And, you know, they'll go ahead and they'll pull something else. So that's the way it works for us. You know, sometimes we also have practices, like we're individually, we all practice at home. And I'll be like, okay, can we guys practice this one song? Make sure you have like something for the next practice. That's about it for us with the sound process.
Where did you guys find your sound?
Well, you wanted to say something.
Huh? No, I mean, it was about your previous question. Like, I think another thing I've noticed is that, like, because a lot of times when they show us songs, it'll be very like acoustic and laid back. I mean, obviously, because it's only two elements in that song. And then once the rest of us come in, it kind of becomes this, like, or at least I know for this one song we have called No Conversation. Like, when they first showed it to us, it was super, like, slow, acoustic, soft. And then once we came in, now it's, like, kind of this, it, there's still, like, a slow acoustic element to it, but then it gets super heavy, like, just in the middle. And we just kind of came up with that, like, when they showed us the song.
And even sometimes some of our old songs get changed around, too. We have another called, oh, my God, it's that.
Here Comes the Breeze?
Here Comes the Breeze. Yeah. And it went from, you know, normal average rock song to brought it up, like, what, two whole steps? And now it's, now it's a country rock song almost. And, you know, some of them don't want to admit they don't like, they like country. But, you know, it's country. So they're almost there.
It's the way I like to look at it is it's where you have instrumentalists. You have, you know, of course, your songer, your singers and songwriters. And then you have your, you know, your vocalist, you know, the prominent stage. And the really interesting thing is there's so many things in life that's like this, where you have different things that have to come together to make one thing work. You know, and like you were saying, where you take something that's kind of like soft, blah, 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 you add a little bit of drums in there. You know, you throw in a little bit of a heavier bass. You get your electric guitar on and you throw in a little bit of synths and you make a little bit of, you know, a little wilder. You know, all of those elements come when you put all of those pieces together.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the way I like to think of it. It's like we're kind of like maybe like some kind of machine, like a car, and then everyone is like an important part. You know, maybe I might write the songs and everything, but at the end of the day, they wouldn't be where they are. Like the songs wouldn't sound the same if I didn't bring it to them and they were to add, you know, whatever they want to add. It definitely does change. Thing.
Yeah. Well, let me what I'm curious, like, especially like anybody that's listening to this, when you guys were making your music, you know, and making your band and doing your live performances and creating your music, what type of environment did you guys find yourself in constantly? Like the type of people that you know, walked up or loved the work that you were doing? I guess maybe it's not an ideal audience, but what the type of environment you grasp towards?
Well, that's a funny question because we actually had a conversation about this. You know, when you think about a band and let's say every time that I have friends or family or someone that I know and ask me, like, oh, what type of music do you play? I always say, like, you know, this is like indie or an alternative rock band. And talking to Brian once, we talk like, okay, what type of environment we want to be? What type of people you think will like our music? And at the end, we came out with this, that we don't really want to like stop us from everyone to listen to our music. So whenever it comes the opportunity to play and perform, we are down no matter where it is. We just tap to adjust a little bit our music. So like we were mentioning before, like acoustic, we can play acoustic or we can just play like this, you know, heavy song. So we always adjust. We don't want to say like our music is for this type of like people or, you know, like for everyone in reality.
I wouldn't say we have no boundaries in terms of genre, but we definitely do have a very like broad, I will say like
diverse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A very broad aspect to our songs. We don't really like to stay in one single sound. Every song, if you look closely to all the songs, they have like quirks and like different mechanics and things that make them different that you could like listen to in other genres as well.
Correct.
It's like a creative tank, you know, just bursting with ideas.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I feel like each one of us has a story. You know, we all have our beginnings with music. You know, if you guys want to walk me and everybody through, where did you fall in love with music? Okay, where did it start?
A little bit long, but I'll make it shorter.
We can always come back.
Please. Okay, so I'm originally from Panama. So my story with music started when I was super little, but I'll make it shorter for you. once I was in a party with my family, I think I was probably like 6 or 7. And there was a producer in there that he was trying to do like a small group that can sing like Christmas songs, but they were all like little children. So he came up with this idea, was part of that group. We actually will perform, travel. And that was probably like for 3 to 4 years. Then after that, there was a, let's say, like, huge competition in my country. At that moment, the name of that competition, it was Código Fama. That was the name. I performed. I won the show. I was sent to Mexico for the other part of the international competition. And I kind of say, like, that's my story, how I started. And then when I came to the U.S., at some point, I get to meet Brian, and he tells me about the band, and I really love the idea to go back to just sing and do what I really love, and that's kind of like my story.
I should go with John, because he joined after her, basically.
Yeah. We're going in order.
Yeah, let's do it in order. I'll do last, even though I was the first one.
So where the question is, where I start music, or where did I really start with? With us.
With music.
All right. So with music, I think it might have started around middle school, maybe like 7th, 8th grade. I think I started watching his YouTube videos. And I don't know if you ever heard of this guy called like The Do. At the time, he made a lot of Black Ops 2 videos, and he would always play guitar on the voice chat. And I'm like, that was so cool. Like, I want to do the same thing. So then, coincidentally, around the same time, I started listening to some of the songs that like he played on the videos, just because like, they sounded really cool. But coincidentally, around the same time, my aunt, her friend, went to University of Florida, and they were getting brand new instruments. So they were kind of just giving away their old ones for free, and for the music school. And so her friend gave. You know, it's like, hey, does any of your family play guitar? And she's like, I know someone who's really into music who wants to learn. So she brought it down, and then I just got a free. That was my first guitar, was a acoustic Dean, and I just started playing on that, learned basic chords, and then from there on out, listen to different art. I really, as an acoustic player, kind of weird, but I really got into like metal at the time, Megadeth, Metallica, some of the old stuff that like my uncles used to listen to. So. I definitely wasn't in that like emo band kid phase yet of like listening to the big bands around 2013 and all that. But I definitely, I listened mainly what some of my older uncles listened to, which is some of those old bands. And, after that, it just spiraled. I got my first electric with a Squire.
Oh, nice.
played more on that. Got chances to play like small little coffee shops and whatnot. And then I think around high school is when I started really putting a lot of work into it, saved up for a better guitar. That's when I got my Gibson SG. And then just from there on out, learned all different styles, blues, country, hard rock, glam.
Oh, wow.
Song ballads, anything I can get my hands on, I take.
Large library.
Yeah. And then after that, it just went up from there, up and up and up.
I have to say, awesome origin story. Free guitar. Listen, I paid $189 for my first guitar. I didn't get anything for free.
I guess mine is also kind of long, just because like I bounced around like a lot of different instruments before finally.
Like we'll tell you guys like straight up, we have a full hour. I know there's 6 of us, but.
All right. I mean, okay.
Yeah.
I'll try not to ramble, but like. Okay. Because if I remember correctly, like, I mean, I've always been into music. I mean, that was just, like, kind of always a thing I was into. And, like,
right.
Since I was a kid, my mom and my brother always listened to, like, classic rock. So that was kind of the first genre I listened to. So, like,
we're all about the artist. That is the whole purpose of this podcast, period. And you have a really valuable tool. You can share this with artists, people that are creative, someone that can. Enjoy this podcast and really enjoy the experience of Lost in the Groove. So, with that, let's jump back to today's episode, shall we?
Guns N' Roses and like Slash's solo stuff and Aerosmith, things like that. So, and like, because I have an older brother, so he would play, he used to play trumpet and guitar. So I kind of, I mean, I looked up to him a lot. So I remember around like a young age, I was like, I want to play trumpet and guitar because my brother's playing trumpet and guitar. And like, I like all these bands with these guitarists and things like that. But I never really actually, because I come from a more like academic musical background. Like I was in band in school and things like that. So
okay,
I first like classically started learning an instrument like in third or fourth grade. I think it was third, but I don't really remember that well. And it was clarinet. But I wanted to play trumpet, but my mom was like, no, play clarinet. So then I did. And that only lasted like a year. So and then like in middle school, I tried teaching myself guitar because I had a guitar, but I couldn't really like afford lessons at the time. So I tried to just teach myself through YouTube and I did that for a while. And then in eighth grade, I joined the music program in that middle school that I went to for eighth grade and I started playing cello. So I played, yeah, like I'm telling you, I bounced around so many different instruments.
Okay, so I'm a stoner and I want to slow you down for just a second. For anybody that's listening here, from what it sounds, you play five instruments?
Well, I don't, okay, I'm only like fluent in drums, right? Because I tried those instruments, but I never actually like, I don't consider it, like, I can't play clarinet. Like, that was just for a year when I was a kid. But, yeah, like, I tried teaching myself guitar. I didn't really go anywhere. So, like, I know, like, very basic guitar, but I'm not, like, you know, a virtuoso in it. And, like, I tried ukulele, too, because I went through, like, a ukulele phase in middle school. Like, you know,
How did you find drums?
Okay. I'm, like, trying to tell this in an organized way. Like,
because I think,
I feel like I was always interested in drums. I just never really had the opportunity to actually like learn them until 2020. Because, yeah, in 2020, this was like late 2020, so some of the, you know, COVID restrictions have been lifted like a little bit. And there was like one music store near me that was actually doing like drum lessons. I mean, they were through Zoom, but whatever. That was the only store doing drum lessons. So I, at that point in 2020, like I'd been realizing, you know, like I'm kind of not that passionate about the cello. And I'm like starting to realize that like, I always had this like untapped interest in drums and percussion. So I was like, you know, I have a lot of free time now because it was 2020. And that's when I kind of pursued like actually doing lessons for drums. And yeah, after that I was like, you know, I found my instrument. Like this is what makes sense to me. And I've just been kind of doing drums ever since.
Oh wow.
Done.
So my musical journey started in, I was like in elementary school. My father, I guess to steer me away from focusing on other things, like bad things, he put me into a music school. And there I learned how to play guitar, took guitar lessons, private guitar lessons, one-on-one tutor. And the school also had like big classes where there would be drummers and keyboard players and guitarists. And we'd all play like a little orchestra. So that's where I started. But at that point, I only knew how to read music, but I didn't know how to read too much, like complex stuff, especially things I wanted to listen to. Like at the time, I was a huge Beatles person. I still am to this day.
Who isn't? If you're not, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast. Just saying.
Yeah, my mom bought me their CD when I was a little kid. And after that, the rest is history. But
awesome.
So there, my guitar skills were limited. So I kind of put it on the side. But I wanted to get back into it. So I decided, maybe with bass, I can become a better guitar player with the finger movements and stuff. So there I discovered tabs. And with tabs, I started learning Nirvana songs, Rage Against the Machine songs. And I started playing the things I really wanted to play. And yeah, and then one day I was following Tees and Poets. Shout out Tees and Poets. and they posted on their story that they were looking for, that after the sunset, I was looking for a bass player. I sent them a DM and now we're here.
Yep. Wow. Yep. So for me, my dad used to play guitar. I never really saw him play guitar. It was just, you know, people told me of the stories. And then my brother played guitar because of him. So because I looked up to my brother a lot, I started playing the guitar when I was like 8. I played it for like a couple months, just dabbled a little bit. And it wasn't until I was 13 or 14 that I got a guitar, a classical guitar for like $50 from a friend. Oh, so that's wow. where I started. Yeah, I started playing a lot. You know, learned all the basic chords. Then I went through a breakup, and that's where.
Oh my god! That's where
I really put all the time that I had, all the time, all the emotion.
Bro, you like legit, like just straight up like TikTok stories, just yeah. over and over again. It's like, yeah, I just wrote this beautiful song, and I broke up with my girlfriend. I really? Love yeah. you so much. Like, what the fuck? What just happened?
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much, yeah. That's kind of what sparked it, you know, me putting all the time into music, and you know. I guess, I don't know, you're probably going to ask us about like how we met, so I'm guessing like, you know. But that's my background in music, that's how I started playing.
Now that you mentioned that, we kind of have this like joke, because because a lot of our songs are kind of like love songs or like breakup songs, and you know, Nali would say this thing of like, you know, before this song we have called Cold Without Your Love, like, hello, and she's like, you know, this is a love song, Brian, who hurt you? And now I've just been like quoting it every time we play Cold Without Your Love. I'm like, this is a love song for Brian, who hurt
Brian
you.
Who hurt you. It's like a little inside joke now for us.
Okay, so like, okay, are you guys like secretly, wait, I guess secretly Swifties? You know, is this like official?
Well, no. I listen to Taylor Swift. I wouldn't consider okay. myself like, yeah.
I mean, because you know the legend about Taylor Swift.
No,
about yeah. like most of her career, you know, is love and breakup songs.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I'm sensing somebody's a fan. Somebody has secret Taylor Swift t-shirts in their closets. Anyone?
Are you a Taylor Swift fan?
I like her music a lot, but I wouldn't consider myself a fan. But I mean, that's kind of like the universal thing about music is like, I think most yeah. musicians kind of like start like that. It's like mm-hmm. they go through something emotional most of the time. It's something related to love. And you know, that's where it starts. And a lot of the Beatles songs were like a lot about love.
Yeah, actually, do you want to hear an interesting story about the Beatles?
Sure.
A fun fact, one of their most notorious albums, which is called Rubber Soul. You ever heard of Rubber Soul?
Right, yeah.
There's a song in there. It's called Norwegian Wood. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, if you've ever seen this song, like you've probably seen this, like if you're doing guitar progression with the chords, and you see what Norwegian wood looks like. It's like, you have to, it's, think 3.5 chords, and you have to also finger pick, and you need a capo. And then on top of that, the whole lyrics of the song make no sense. It sounds like an IKEA commercial. Can you imagine that shit? Like a vintage IKEA, Norwegian, you know, and it's like, $3.99. Come to your local IKEA. But that was an interesting feat. And the reason was, is, and John Lennon said this, the whole purpose of the song was he loved the tune so much that he wanted to add words to it. And the best way he thought was add a vibe.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And I know a lot of stuff about the Beatles. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, now that you bring that up, we kind of do have a song that was written like that. It's a matter of time. It's a song that where I just picked up like an E minor, and then I just moved it up, like, I think it was like in thirds or something like that. And I just like strummed the same pattern over and over. And then I was like, okay, this sounds kind of cool. And that ended up being like the first song that I wrote for the band. So it's like, if you look up the lyrics, they kind of don't make sense. It's just like random. The lyrics are just like random about like, you know, being angry at something.
Yeah.
Just like
whatever you want.
Yeah. Whatever. It's like super abstract.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing sometimes with music. Yeah, it can sometimes be love and breakup songs, but
right.
that's just one layer to the onion. Because yeah. whenever you're making music, and whenever you're adding those chords and when you're adding those lyrics, sometimes it's lyric heavy and sometimes it's chord heavy, you know, and sometimes it's progression heavy. And then it just depends. I don't know. I mean, for me, it just depends on the mood and the vibe.
True.
For sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or what are you going through at the moment?
No. Oh, yeah. Like just that, like sometimes that hungover feeling, you know, Saturday morning. Like, oh my God. You know what I'm talking about.
I think the reason why a lot of the songs that, you know, in general are love songs is because, like, it's one of probably the strongest emotion you can feel. So, you know, people relate to that. So it's super common to, you know, for artists to write about that. In the end, the way I see music is just like another language, you know, for things that we cannot say with our own words. So, you know, it's a really good tool to, like, express those feelings that you cannot express with your own voice.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's interesting you mentioned that. I wrote a song many, many months ago on guitar. It was called Cindy. And the song was literally about a person that was madly in love with this person, but he would see her on the subway and he'd see her around, but he just never had the guts to go after her. And it's as if, as you go deeper to the layer of the onion, what you're hearing is different people giving their perspective, their own musical approach to their relationships, to the way that they feel. Like, you know, you said, in that moment,
yeah, that's why they say that music is the language of the soul, you know, like, it's an interesting way of, like, putting things out.
I mean, it's brought all of you guys together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking about that the other day at a dentist, funny enough.
The stars align.
yeah, we went out, like, what was it, like, 2 years ago? And, like, I think it was her and Dan, we went out to eat after the party. And then we just started talking about how everything, like, all of our stories, they connected in, like, some coincidental way or something. And, like, it brought us up together. It's kind of cool when you, like, when you dive into her story a lot deeper. It's kind of cool what happened with her. And, you know.
Yeah. It's like somebody that had some funny business upstairs in heaven, you know. Can you imagine, like, a chairman of the board up there being like... We're going to make this interesting. We're going to move this over there and move it over. No. Let's put this person in Mexico, you know, and put that one in that school. This might work.
They were cooking something. I don't know.
But it is kind of that way. I feel that, you know, the universe is a living, breathing thing, and it has a way of... Here's the thing. I found that the more that you plan and the more that you structure, personally, I find you fail more. Instead of if you go more with the flow and you just let things be, sometimes it's kind of easier.
I've been someone like that my entire life. I think I just kind of go with the flow a lot. I try to structure some things, but
oh my God.
I just go with the flow. Mm-mm. Yeah, I know that it works for me for the most part, but I know that for some people, they cannot have, you know, like, their life is a structure and it works like that. So, I mean,
I think a good balance of both.
Yeah.
The best,
yeah, for sure.
Because you can go with the flow, but if you don't put in the work,
right?
No, yeah.
The flow ain't going to take you nowhere.
Yeah, I found that the hard way.
Yeah, you can jump in the river, but you can't swim.
Okay.
That was the best way to put it.
Okay, listen, stop spilling secrets about us here in Florida, okay? We know we love skinny dipping in the Everglades, but let's let it be. I feel also that just the environment down here is just bursting with just absolute creativity. There's just Miami, Hollywood, Fort Lauderdale. I'm not going to talk about West Palm. I'm sorry. But everywhere else, you find all of these interesting people, and I feel like you were saying you have all these different live performances you're going to, right? Just going to any different... Can you imagine, like, the different places you're going to, like, different types of people there, how drunk they are? Is it indoors? Is it outdoors? Am I going to sweat balls because it's 83 degrees humidity outside?
Yeah.
I mean, me personally, I sweat even indoors. Like, it doesn't matter.
Same here.
It doesn't matter where I am. Yeah. Damn.
Our last gig, we were in.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Our last gig was intense. Yeah. Yeah. It was really hot.
And it was, like, an indoor performance.
It was an indoor performance. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
When you say drenched, how drenched are we talking?
Like,
I had a white shirt under my jacket, and it's like, bro, when I went home,
you were wearing a jacket. I don't know why.
I was wearing a tank top, and I was like, I was dying.
What are you, Danzig? Wearing a jacket on stage? Bruce Springsteen?
I'm always wearing hoodie for some reason because, like, okay, so where I come from in Nicaragua, no one wears hoodies. Like, it's not a thing that you see. It's not normal. So, like, when I came here...
I did not know that. That's interesting.
Yeah. When I came here, and, like, you know, like, I would go to school, and I was, like, freezing because I wasn't used to being indoors with AC. I started wearing hoodies, and I just liked them. So, ever since that, I became, like, part of my attire, you know.
It's like
I'm like a character in a cartoon, and, like, he's the guy that's always wearing... Yeah.
The same jacket!
Yeah.
You're like, and then when they have the scene when they open up a closet, it's just the same. Just
yeah, no, it is. Yes,
he's a Power Ranger.
Yeah, I'm a Power Ranger.
Please don't pick the pink one. Please don't pick the pink one. Please.
I don't know why I always like the black one.
My favorite was the green one because I was two, and supposedly this is the story. I was 2 years old. And I threw a tantrum because I wanted the green Power Ranger. And I hit a kid over with a basket.
Oh, my God. A
plastic basket.
Amen.
Because he tried to take away my green Power Ranger.
You gotta do it, man.
Wait, what's your favorite, like, iteration of Power Rangers? Like, Wild Force?
That's the question.
You know?
Well, I was born in 99. So when I was a kid, I was seeing what was reruns from the late 90s. So there was a live action. By the time the cartoons came out, I just wasn't interested.
Were there cartoons? Because
I didn't even knew that.
There was.
At some point, yeah, there were.
There was an animation series, but I remember the live action series. That was badass. You remember, slow motion?
Ninjas? No, okay, because the one I would always watch was... What's it called? Dino Thunder?
Dino Thunder was
so unmatched. The theme song, like everything about it, unmatched.
Moving hard in this room.
It's like, do you remember, you know those posts, like, do you remember this? It's like, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't historicalize my, you know, my childhood, okay? We're not there yet. God. What's your thoughts on vintage sound?
Vintage sound, we're talking like
breaks, beats.
Do you have an opinion on
that?
Breaks,
like, what is our opinion on vintage sound?
You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about?
Not really.
Yeah, really. I gotta go all into my tone. Trust me.
All right,
pedals up.
You've heard of Creedence Clearwater Revival?
Yes.
Okay, like blues, rock.
Vintage style.
Okay. I like sometimes playing around with that stuff. You ever played around with that stuff?
Yeah. No, for sure.
I think so, John for sure is like more into that.
So yeah. I'm a sound fanatic, and like, you know, I hate.
Aren't we all?
Do you
secretly have an 808 stashed away that we don't know about?
I once tried to save for a JCM. Until I found out those were well over a thousand, and they were hand wired. After that, I just settled for a Katana. And that was about it. Let me just hang up this call real quick.
Oh, nice.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right, man.
So yeah, I was originally saving for a Marshall JCM or Plexi, not JCM, Plexi. But then I found out that was, you know, dreams that couldn't be reached at the moment. So
much money.
I can definitely say that to answer your question, I am a huge fan of vintage sound, and I think for guitars in general, I hate to sound like, you know, old man yells at cloud and whatnot, but I think the way guitars are nowadays, and this is just the style of music, you can't deny that, so you can't really, like, you know, beat on it too much, because that's just, you know, things change.
Of course.
I'm sure the same arguments were being made in the 80s and 90s. So, but me personally, I think guitars nowadays have become too, like, I can't say electric because they're already electric. I mean more, everyone's so focused on these pedals, like these.
They're less mechanical.
Pedals. Yeah, it's too mechanical. You know, it's just like kind of like the, you lay down the beat, you have the chords, and there's your song. And you have some reverb and chorus, but you don't, you know, you don't look for like anything smoky. You don't look for anything grungy. You don't look for like that solid feel to the sound. You know, it's just kind of there just to supplement the song. But I feel like a lot of guitarists nowadays don't really take advantage of the fact that there's so many different. There's a lot of ways you can elevate the songs just by having your own sound. It doesn't have to sound like every, you know, like a synth all the time, or just no. have chords and that's it.
I yeah, consider After the Sunset to have a vintage sound to it, you know, classic rock, you know, from the back in the days.
Yeah.
Different yeah, times.
I don't know if this is considered vintage sound, but I mean, I'm a big, like, jazz fan, so I try to incorporate, like, a jazz style to my playing.
That's
but
the vintage.
I mean, it's, I don't know, the thing with jazz is, right, is, like, you obviously have, like, a million different styles of jazz, and then there's also like a lot of contemporary jazz.
Yeah,
so.
But it's all about percussion. That's the thing. It's about like if you have a clarinet playing and you have a trumpet and you have a, you know, you have a trombone, they all sound differently. They're all going to sound differently. So with jazz, like you're pointing out, you have to be able to, how are you going to take these pieces, put them in there so they sound cohesive?
Correct. Yeah. So sometimes I try to incorporate kind of a more jazz feel. I mean, obviously when it's appropriate for the song, but I don't know if that's
obviously
considered, but you know, kind of depends, because mm-hmm. I do really like big band from like the 40s, so I do try to incorporate some of that too.
To be honest, like being just out of the box and being creative, I feel it's not, maybe the word vintage is not the right approach. I think the right approach is just looking at, you know, the mechanical standpoint. I remember reading this a while back. You know, you take a band like Led Zeppelin, okay? They had many tracks where the instruments were untuned on purpose. Mm-hmm. They sound gnarly, but they're awesome. You know, and you've had with AC/DC where they purposely have raised the amperage. They change the sound on, I don't know the exact terminology, my apologies, correct me, making it louder than it needs to be. So it's just obnoxiously long and you get that wave. I feel there's a loss when you don't have that mechanical feel. You know, that little bit of like, this is not all done by a computer.
Right.
And I think a little bit of that has to be with, I don't know if I just noticed this, but most artists you see nowadays, you know, they're solos. You know, they're just, I feel like every, you know, you name the top biggest artists in the world nowadays and they're solo acts. And that's nothing wrong with that. But I feel like even though solo acts, they have bands they work with and they have guitarists they work with or any other instruments. And I feel like, I think the solo artists themselves can do themselves a massive favor by just learning like the true range that their musicians and their instruments have. I feel like if they really got that into perspective, I think a lot of them can elevate, you know, some of them are already pretty good by themselves, but they can elevate it 1,000 times more, you know, and I think it would bring a new sound and a new groove to what they're trying to look for sometimes.
Yeah. It's all about, I feel, just opening up, you know, and just being willing to accept the criticism, opening up yourself to new ideas, things you might not have thought about. You know, and not being upset that you weren't able to figure it out. Because, look, the thing is, me playing guitar, you playing guitar, you playing bass, you playing drums, I may not figure out something that you may notice, you know, and that's something that you learn as a group working together, like different things that you can help each other to be able to make a better sound. That takes work. It doesn't happen overnight, you know, like it's not magical where part three, and it's like, yay, everybody's happy.
Yeah,
no.
It is a process, yeah.
For sure. Yeah,
yeah, for us, I think we've found our way of putting the different, yeah, everything together, because we all like...
Hey, it's Dave, and I quickly just wanted to jump in and say, if you've been enjoying the podcast, enjoying this episode, if you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, that'll be so greatly appreciated. Because here's the thing, someone might read that review and make the choice if they want to listen to the podcast. You get to help grow this podcast with us. How fucking cool is that? Let's jump back to today's episode.
Different kind of genres and styles of music, but we do overlap in some stuff. Probably the one that probably overlaps the most with everyone here is me, because I listen to a lot of the stuff that she listens to. Maybe it might not be my favorite thing to listen to, but I really like listening to a lot of different genres, because I mean, I feel like it helps me with songwriting. So at some point in my life, I was very strict to myself about what kind of music I used to listen to. Oh, I just listen to the Beatles and the Foo Fighters and Nirvana, and that's it. And then at some point in my life, I was like, okay, you know what? I kind of want to like know more. I know that there's more to music than just this little box that I'm like picking things from. So I started listening to a lot of things. So yeah.
I'm kind of the same way. Like I have a very eclectic music taste. Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure Jonathan could tell you, like, I put my songs on shuffle. It's like, here's Disney soundtrack. Here's Hozier. Here's like Slipknot. And then
Fleetwood Mac.
And it's just, you know, Cali Uchis. Like, it's all over the place. But I mean, that's kind of always how my music taste has been, because I just like different kinds of music. Yeah, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, I think it helps me kind of understand music deeper, at least. Like, I understand why. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I understand why every genre has what it has. Because, you know, like, for rap and hip-hop, like, you know, computer-generated sounds are kind of necessary, and it works. And then for rock, you know, you need those live instruments. And sometimes you can switch it around, and sometimes you can make a hip-hop song so much more elevated by having like real musicians play it, and vice versa. And I just
like funk jazz. Yeah, I know you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, I don't even know where I was going with that, but I find myself, I just enjoy a lot of different types of music.
I think it has been interesting for her a lot, like the band itself, because she, like, I think she has probably the more distinct music taste out of all of us, because like we all kind of gravitate around rock, and she listens more to like powerhouse artists such as Adele. She likes you can talk about her yourself.
You basically said it. Like, I'm a huge fan of Adele, Whitney Houston.
Tough
big love. Voices, big voices, technically, you know. Like, I've never ever like took like real classes, like going to vocal lessons and stuff like that. Like, I actually started practicing now, like, that I was going into the band and stuff like that. But I was always gravitate like with big voices, just to put it like that, and always just play around. I think I have told you before, like, before joining the band for like 4 or 5 years, just to enjoy and have a good time, I would jump into a Discord, karaoke Discord, and I was just start singing and sing with people, you know, like. But yeah, I still listen to rock, but I cannot tell you like that was something that I was listening all the time before joining the band. But now, like, I definitely listen a little bit more of everything.
Yeah.
It's good to have a good balance and taste of music. Unfortunately, I'm not that much of the case. I mean, the newest music I listen to is like 93. The oldest music I listen to is like 52. So, but listen, I want early 90s, you know, like, I don't know, in the middle of the 90s, it got a little too mushy.
Yeah, early 90s.
Yeah.
Late 90s was good. You know, late 90s was a really good period. You got a lot of indie, you got a lot of alternative rock, you got a lot of cool stuff that came out of that period. God, there's so much music everywhere, constantly. Yeah. And just so much that we can learn. I mean, when you're an artist and you're in this constant workflow and constantly creating, it's kind of like your food. You know, it's kind of like your.
It pretty much is, yeah.
Yeah.
No?
Yeah.
No, yeah, definitely.
I want to touch on that point that you said there's a lot of music, and that you said there's a lot of creative people out here in Miami and stuff. And I believe that's so true. As we've performed more with other bands, I see that all these bands are talented as hell. And I see like sort of a rock renaissance going on because a lot of these bands play like that old school grunge, indie rock, alternative rock that goes back to the 90s, 80s, 70s. And a lot of the young people really like it and enjoy it. And I would have never thought that back then when I was like 18 or 17, because people my age and that age liked just hip hop or, you know, party music. I see a lot of young people starting to really like enjoy rock and seeing live bands. And there's so many bands out here that are so talented.
A lot of cities are changing, you know, just the way that you've had just the outburst of Tennessee, you know, the way Austin's been changing with comics. I really believe that can happen here in South Florida. I really believe that we can have, you know, that boom for artists, especially with rock bands, singers, songwriters. And it's just, like you said, it's everywhere. You go to Miami, you go to Hollywood, you go to Fort, it's everywhere. There is a place where you got these people that are playing. And I guess there needs to be more awareness, but I guess more of it is you got to explore it to find out what it's all about.
I feel like it's getting easier to find, slowly but sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in my case, I used to think that at some point, you know, like, oh, no one's making the music that I like anymore. But then, you know, I think with online streaming, like streaming music was a big change for me because I realized, oh, my God, there's like all this music out there. And it's like even labeled, you know, and the algorithm even like shows you music that you might like. So eventually that's when I started to like listen to all the new stuff that's out there. And it's incredible. Like you just find so much stuff coming out. I even started tapping in into like Japanese jazz, Japanese rock, and like I was like, wow, there's like so much to learn from here, you know.
Japanese 1970s, 1960s Japanese psychedelic rock.
It was amazing.
Instrumental. Yeah. Oh my God.
Jazz pianists from that era too.
No,
like,
just Japanese jazz in general.
In general, yes. It's just so amazing.
Good.
Yeah.
So good.
My favorite is it's called Tiger Fusion. Do you know what that is?
Nope.
So it's I don't know if it's a form or a type, but in Japan they have a form of jazz where they take traditional Japanese instruments and they mix in modern classical instruments such as a cello, a violin, a piano, and the sounds kind of clash sometimes. Oh my God, it, you have to hear it.
That's cool.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
I'm a sucker for old primitive instruments.
Yeah, same. Yeah, same.
Especially like a Japanese organ. Those things are scary. You know what I'm talking about? Do you know what I'm talking? They, you know what, you know those large organs that have that very weeping, willowing sound?
Yeah.
And especially like when I'm listening to some songs, when you have that, you know, just walking in there, you know, this is going to like, this is real. You know, whenever you get like a heavy bass or just the second you play it, it's so interesting. You don't know that until you start making the song, if that's going to happen. It's so like, so random. Like you don't think about that from the beginning. Why?
Yeah. It's the same with us. Kind of something similar happens when like, where we have a song, right? And we think it's done, and then when we get to recording, we end up adding like things just like on the fly, that we didn't even think about it. Like when we were making the songs, it happens to us.
Because also when you're recording, I mean, you can like at least for guitar, right? You can like layer stuff that you can't really play physically live. So
yeah,
unless you loop it, but
it's hard.
It's like you show up to a live performance. We're like, all right, so for this song, I'm going to put this iPad down here. Okay. This is your performance. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, it sometimes can feel like that because you can sometimes have, you know, 12, 13, 14 layers, sometimes 22, depending on the track that you're working on. And when you're working with that much, like doing that in a live performance with just five people,
it's impossible. Yeah. You cannot recreate the same sound.
Yeah.
Have you tried doing that?
No, we haven't got it done.
straight instruments and vocals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, sorry, Ula. If you guys are doing live performances, what do you favor more? You prefer doing that more, or do you prefer, you know, doing things more, like in regards to like your social content? You know, where you're doing things together, you know, you're doing your recording sessions, you're posting out music. What do you guys like doing more?
Well,
let's go one by one.
One by one.
I guess I'll start. For me, is I really like the creation process because I like to be creative with things. So I really enjoy when we're making the song from the ground, you know. And I also enjoy performances a lot. It's really cool. It's a whole different vibe when you're in front of people. And it feels amazing when people tell you that they like your songs, and you know, and you can see the facial expressions when you're playing, and then they're enjoying. It's a really cool feeling, for sure.
Yeah, I kind of like in the same like with you. I would say I like to when we play like around our music, and you know, like we just change it like from the regular way that we play it to acoustic. Or we just try to change different things on the songs. Like, I really like to see how that sounds, because you can just play one song like in so many ways. And, you know, like we bring sometimes that into the actual live shows. So I would say that's one of the things that I enjoy the most.
You want
to go first?
All right. Well, for me, I think my favorite thing is performing. I love performing. I mean, yeah, I don't know, like, obviously I do enjoy the creative side of things as well, but I think performing is just, like, because I like the whole process of it. I like, you know, getting ready, you know, packing up all your gear, then taking your gear, then unpacking it again and moving around. I like it.
Wow,
I don't know if that's so exciting.
That's the part I hate the most.
hey, listen, I don't know if it's like just my band kid in
especially
me.
Especially the drummer is saying that, you know?
The drummer.
Syllables and stuff, moving those around.
Woo. I don't know. I think that's probably just like my inner band kid speaking, because yeah, like even in high school band, it's like there's just that excitement of like, you know, we're finally gonna perform the thing we've been practicing for months, and then you know you get to move around, pack, you know, set up the stage, move the chairs, and like I don't know. To me, it's just always a fun thing, just being able to be all involved in that process of like setting up your instrument, making sure everything's good, actually performing, interacting with the crowd. And then packing everything up, you know, going home. Like, I enjoy the whole process of it.
I love that. I love that.
I love being live. I would choose that any time of the day. Simply because I love how flexible you can be with it. It's raw and it's to the point. It's right there. Everything's in front of you. And you don't backtrack. You just it's flexible. Like you can choreograph it. You can set it up right. You can set it up how you want. You can have little like divots in here. Change something up. You know, if I find out that an artist has like a live album of their music, I'm almost always listening to that on repeat. I love how they bring it out. How they flesh it out. Like 4-minute songs meant to be like, you know, just advertisable on their records are turned into like 8-minute power ballads and they make it work. It's not boring. They do something in it to really flesh it out. And I feel like when artists are performing live, it's really what everything they wanted to do in the studio that they couldn't do because of like, you know, a contract or a record label, or just because it was too long, they get to do on stage, and it really fleshes out the performance, and it can always change. No performance is the same it was.
Damn. Oh my God. Whoa. All
right. So for me, I love performing. I love the face of the people that see us when we're done. But what I love most, just as much as performing, I would say, is the recording process. I believe like hearing the end result, or the close to near to the end result, I feel like it feels so good, just that we're making something that came from our minds. But it's now something concrete.
Yeah.
And that's something that's going to last forever. We might not last forever, but that song that we've created and that's on a streaming service is going to last way for years and decades to come. So I think that's so fulfilling to me.
I wanted to add on.
So true. Yeah.
I wanted to add on and say, like, I don't know if you've heard the live album, Where the Light Is. Where the Light Is. So that was 2008. It was John Mayer's live album when he was advertising Continuum. And, like, the hit song on that album, Gravity, is, like, three, almost, like, edging 4 minutes. And live, it's, like, 9:30. And it's one of the most beautiful sounds that I've ever heard. I'm not saying that there's no bias in that, because I am one of his fans. I love his music. I love his style. But like, there's no bias in that. Like, I just really do think that out of all the live performances I've heard of a song, I think that version of his song and that album was one of the best performances, best sounds I've like ever had the pleasure of hearing.
I feel in many ways it's like, if you want to hear the artist, you go see them. If you want to experience the artist, you listen to them.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
Damn.
You learn a lot about the artist whenever you're going to see them live. That maybe, like, if you were to just listen to them, like, on the radio or, you know.
It's totally different.
Totally different experience,
You get to also, interact with people. You know, you get to make people laugh, you get to people to jump up and down, you know, and be a part of it. It's really interesting. You get to, as a job, you get to do something that not that many people get to do. Get to make people happy.
Mm-hmm. It's fulfilling.
Yeah, it is. Damn, right word, fulfilling. There we go.
It makes all the work we put in worth it in the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're able to literally come together. Mm. You know, it's, you know, interesting thing, like looking back at our past, I feel we're building from it. We're taking elements from that time and creating something from it. And it's ever changing. It gets better and better as every single year goes. I don't know. That's how I feel.
Yeah.
So question for you guys, everybody that's been listening, that's made it all the way here. I know you guys are down here in South Florida and you guys are based in Miami. Where can people find your music, your content, and if they want to check out, when you guys have live venues?
Good question.
Well, our social media, I will say the main one that we use the most is Instagram. So that's After the Sunset FL altogether. And in there, you're going to find a link tree that links you to everything else, like our Spotify, our YouTube channel, and all that stuff.
Apple Music.
Yeah. TikTok. Yeah. When we release a song, the distributor that we use, DistroKid, they are in charge of distributing the song through all the platforms.
Yeah.
So you're going to find them even on Instagram as well.
Yeah. You're going to find it on YouTube Music, Spotify, Pandora. Like literally any place that you think that the music is going to be, you're going to find that in there. Yeah.
Perfect. Live events.
Also Instagram.
Yeah. We announce all of it there.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well,
if anyone's listening, heads up, November 18th at Lincoln Beard Brewery. That's on Bird Road, a little behind the,
Just wanted to point out, this episode is not going to be posting until December.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my apologies. So, great way to start the holiday season. I'm just going to say.
Okay.
Yeah. But my apologies. You're saying about it. I'm actually curious. What's happening on November 18th?
Well, I mean, that's one of our gigs. It's the Lincoln Beard Brewery. It's off of Bird Road, like a little close to the 826. It's behind something. I don't know exactly. There's a store, a gas station.
I'm going to make a post. Like, if you guys put anything out, I'll make a post early on before the episode goes out. So don't worry. I'll make sure we'll get a little stuff out there. We'll listen. I don't know how I managed to make this podcast work for an hour. You guys have been absolutely awesome. I think this has been really amazing experience. Like, hello, when do you get the opportunity to speak to an entire band? You know?
Yeah.
If we can use the last 20 seconds, how did you find us? I was really surprised by
that. Yeah.
True.
I found you guys through Leia Simmons.
Oh, I have heard. Yes, I have heard.
Yeah. So yeah. This is one of the things that I'm trying to do is I constantly am looking throughout Instagram, in different places, talking with people throughout Florida for different artists and trying to bring them onto the podcast. You're one of the awesome people that I reached out to that came back and wow. Yeah. So,
thank you.
Yeah, and like, honestly, like we said, like there's so many of their, you know, so many bands and just so many people to talk with, but like just to spend the time to hear your guys, your story, what type of music you're making, and just being together, just making groovy songs, you know, and getting that beat.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, awesome.
Yes. Well, listen, if anybody wants to find the podcast, we are on Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Lost in the Groove Pod. So with that, catch you in the next episode. Bye, everybody.
Bye, thank you. Yeah.